Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 909, a different kind of Tea Party, eugenics, fascism, and the New Age. This is being recorded on May 19th of the year 2016. Of course, one of the phenomena that has dominated the political scene here in the U.S. over the last 7 or so years is the Tea Party. This is a right-wing activist group within Congress in the Republican Party that has taken its name from the Boston Tea Party in the run-up to the Revolutionary War here in the United States. The Tea Party is an extreme right-wing manifestation, and what we are doing in this program is looking at literally a different kind of Tea Party. It also, in my opinion, is an extreme right-wing manifestation. It, however, the program in this manifestation is inextricably linked with the Celestial Seasonings Tea and Food Company. Celestial Seasonings makes a number of herbal teas, best known for Sleepy Time Tea. And for all of the groovy, touchy-feely accoutrement around this flower child-generated business. In fact, the story of Celestial Seasonings is inextricably linked with the ideological, some might say spiritual, I would say ideological, orientation of Mo Siegel. His last name is capital M-O, capital S-I-E-G-E-L, along with a fellow named John Hay. They founded Celestial Seasonings. And in addition to, obviously, the suggestion that this herbal tea is heavenly in its taste and effect, the reference to celestial is actually more than just casual or aesthetic, because as we are going to see, Mo Siegel and the people in that company are very much influenced by a book called The Urantia Book. That's spelled capital U-R-A-N-T-I-A. This is a book which in all probability was in its genesis something of a fraud. It purports to be something that was directly channeled from, I guess one could say, divine space aliens, the theology slash cosmology slash philosophy underlying the Urantia book is that human beings and indeed sentient beings on many, many other planets are all evolved from space aliens who are at the same time divine beings. It is quite similar in certain foundational respects to what we examined in a For the Record show about the Nine. Originally, that was Plan 9 from Berchtesgaden. We recently took a look at that in, recap that in For the Record 874. The Nine basically purports to be the ancient gods of Egypt and also space aliens and the fathers or mothers or what have you, the progenitors of humanity and our civilization. At the foundation of the Nine is something of a racist assumption, which is that the human beings are evolved from space aliens except for the African race. This is a pseudo-scientific and racist philosophy called polygenesis, the notion that some of us are evolved from one kind of being and others of us are evolved from another kind of being. In fact, the study of genetics has revealed quite conclusively that we have evolved from common ancestry, and that, in fact, the first identifiable human was an African female who has been nicknamed or named by anthropologists and geneticists Eve. Every human being on Earth, from the most, quote, Aryan, unquote, blonde-haired, blue-eyed Northern European to all the rest of us, have a piece of her genetic material in us. That is the way that cells divide, and that is the way that human and other organisms reproduce. The nine presumes that some of us evolved from space aliens who have blonde hair, fair skin, and blue eyes, except for the African race, who are therefore inherently inferior. In other words, some of us evolved from the space aliens, the more highly evolved civilization, except for those people who evolved from, take your pick. At the core of the Urantia book is something quite similar. Urantia purports that an alien duo called Adam and Eve manifest on many, many, many different worlds or planets around the universe, and that they have fair skin and blue eyes. And the notion is inherent in the philosophy presented in the Urantia book that over time, the human race has degenerated as the hereditarily uplifting influence of the fair-skinned, blue-eyed Adam and Eve has become polluted. The fundamentals of the Urantia book, which is quite big in the New Age, are inherently racist. And indeed, when we take a look at the Urantia book, we are going to look at how the philosophy of this, we all are evolved from space aliens and we're going to re-evolve into even better space aliens, and eventually everything is going to be hunky-dory. The notion is that in time, genetically inferior stocks of beings will be eliminated. Urantia is nothing if not eugenic in orientation, and I think that the propagation of New Age philosophy and the susceptibility of the very credulous to the influence of things like the Nine and the Urantia book and the gravitas of many of the elements that are presenting these things. The Nine have been touted by some fairly prestigious individuals, also people with links to the aerospace industry. A guy named Arthur Young, a relative of Michael Payne, the husband of Ruth Payne, one of Lee Harvey Oswald and Marina Oswald's babysitters, is among the people who has endorsed the Nine. I think the gravitas of organizations like Celestial Seasonings, which is very, not only very highly regarded and has a sort of benign, touchy-feely aura about it, is something that makes the philosophy that is inherent in the Urantia book or something like the Nine basically a fascist slash eugenics slash Nazi philosophy in its fundament. It makes it all the more seductive. One of the things that we are going to look at as well in our discussion of the Urantia book concerns the direct connections between people who loom large in the genesis of the Urantia book and the eugenics movement as a whole. In For the Record 908, we reviewed some of the information that we have touched on, or not touched on, but detailed in the past about the eugenics movement, its relationship to the international mental hygiene movement, and in turn, its influence on the euthanasia movement, the right to die movement, and in Nazi Germany, the Tiergartenstrasse 4 or T4 extermination program, which was the forerunner of, really, sort of the midwife and godfather at the same time, to mix a metaphor, of the Nazi extermination programs. In an era in which machines of one type or another, whether robots or artificial intelligence or sophisticated software, figure to be replacing a lot of jobs and therefore a lot of livelihood that people have used to sustain themselves, I think that the pressure to eliminate surplus humanity, unquote, is going to accelerate. And while we may not see something along the lines of concentration camps and gas chambers, I think that the advances in genetic engineering and the applications of genetic engineering to biological warfare on the one hand, we've spoken, for example, in the past about AIDS and the very disturbing indication that AIDS was deliberately created and that it is a genetically engineered organism or disease. Bear in mind that there is a gene that affords purebred Northern Europeans, or, quote, Aryans, unquote, a hereditary immunity to infection by HIV. Black people, people of African descent, by the same token, have a hereditary susceptibility to infection by AIDS. I think the advances in genetic engineering, the possible applications of that to biological warfare, including the synthesizing or the coordination of biological warfare with GMO foods or medicines or what have you, offers a potentially sinister vector for eliminating human beings. Beyond that, what I have referred to as von Clausewitzian economics, taking the theories of Prussian military theoretician Karl von Clausewitz and applying them to economics. Von Clausewitz spoke of war as the continuation of politics by other means. By the same token, his concept of the post-war could be said to realize that politics was the continuation of war by other means. One does not have to shoot people or hang them or disembowel them or behead them or gas them to eliminate them. If one uses social and economic pressure to reduce their income, to reduce their access to healthy food, to reduce their access to proper medical care, proper housing, clothing, what have you, those people are going to die just as surely as if they were shot or hanged or gassed. And I think of the possibilities of the application of von Clausewitzian economics, the continuation of war by other means, and the temptations that are offered by the development of genetically engineered binary pathogens are truly sinister and threaten us very much. I am extremely worried, as I mentioned in For the Record 908, that as machines, software, AI, what have you, replace jobs, that the people who are thus displaced are going to be eliminated. I don't think that given the nature of our the elements that dominate our politics and our economics, that having a guaranteed basic income, or GBI, or universal basic income, UBI, are really very likely. I may be wrong, I hope I'm wrong, but I am afraid that I am right. So, as we prepare to delve into the milieu surrounding celestial seasonings, and the Urantia book. I think a huge caveat, a major red alert is in order here. Note that in regard to the Urantia book, influential geneticists such as a psychologist named William Sadler, S-A-D-L-E-R, who in turn was connected with the influential Kellogg family. They launched the Kellogg cereals and in turn have links to very powerful American families who themselves were pro-eugenics, people like the Rockefellers, Thomas Edison, and others. Places the racist philosophy inherent in the Urantia book in a more recognizable and perhaps even more sinister context. In turn, the Urantia Fellowship has perpetuated the eugenics orientation that is contained in the Urantia book, and a fellow named Kermit Anderson, who was in charge of genetics screening for Kaiser Permanente medical institutions, was one of the people in the Urantia Fellowship. So as we look at this, we want to be on the alert for the seduction of the well-intentioned but very credulous New Agers, and at the same time, we want to be paying very close attention indeed to the men behind the curtain, or perhaps in some cases the women behind the curtain, because they are part and parcel to the eugenics philosophy that we examined in our last show and that we have examined in our various discussions of eugenics, the euthanasia movement, the right to die movement, and related elements.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
So, about celestial seasonings and the Urantia book, a very, very different kind of tea party indeed. We read the following. This is by Megan, M-E-G-A-N, Giller, G-I-L-L-E-R. It is from the blog Van Winkles, capital V-A-N, capital W-I-N-K-L-E, from February 1st of 2016. The article is titled, Cults, Conspiracies, and the Twisted History of Sleepy Time Tea. Again, the author, Megan or Megan, M-E-G-A-N, Giller, G-I-L-L-E-R. It reads, its calming combination of chamomile, spearmint, and other herbs might seem benign, almost boring, the ideal formula for lulling you to sleep. But there's a peculiar story lurking in your cup of sleepy time tea, one that concerns involuntary trances, communication with aliens, and a eugenics plot to eliminate the inferior races, unquote, of our great nation. Once again, but there's a peculiar story lurking in your cup of sleepy time tea, one that concerns involuntary trances, communication with aliens, and a eugenics plot to eliminate the inferior races of our great nation. Before sleepy time became the crown jewel of celestial seasonings with 1.6 billion cups sold per year, before the company became the largest tea manufacturer in North America, the tea was nothing more than a dream in the heads of a few flower children hiking up the Rocky Mountains in search of herbs. One of the friends, Mo Siegel, was serving an Asian herbal tea to customers in a local shop to much success in 1969. The concept that tea, unquote, could be herbal was innovative in itself, since up until then, all tea in America and Great Britain was made of the plant Camellia or Camellia, C-A-M-E-L-L-I-A, sinensis, S-I-M-E-N-S-I-S. The group wanted to get into the business. On those first hikes, the team harvested enough herbs for 500 pounds of a blend they called Mo's 36 Herb Tea, and the sleep conjuring tea made of chamomile, spearmint, and other herbs soon followed. In no time, the friends were sauntering into the local bank to get a loan for their new business, quote, wearing jeans, smelling of herbs, armed with Tupperware containers of Moe's 36 and Sleepy Time blends, unquote. They called their company Celestial Seasonings after co-founder Lucinda Zeising's flower name. That's capital L-U-C-I-N-D-A, Zeising, Z-I-E-S-I-N-G. Continuing. But there might be another reason they named it Celestial, unquote. Mo Siegel and John Hay, H-A-Y, two of the founders, were avid believers in a New Age Bible called the Urantia Book, which followers call, quote, an epical revelation authored solely by celestial beings, unquote. The book touches upon everything from mind control to a eugenics plot to eliminate the inferior races of our great nation. In fact, the religious text is responsible for much more than the name of the company. In You've Got to Read This Book, 55 people tell the story of the book that changed their life. Siegel discloses that the ideals he gathered from the Urantia book guided how he ran Celestial Seasonings from the beginning and provided a moral compass for himself and his employees. I had wanted bold, and I found bold, he wrote. I wanted spiritual adventure, and I was on the ride of my life. I was searching for truth, and that book was loaded with it, unquote. The Urantia Book, a 4.3-pound, 2,097-page tome, first published in 1955, is a modified Seventh-day Adventist text supposedly communicated to an anonymous man in a trance by aliens. In reality, it was likely authored in the early 1900s by a psychiatrist named William Sadler, S-A-D-L-E-R, who used it as a vessel for his racist ideas. You can download the entire book for free because the Urantia Foundation asserts that its authorship is superhuman. An Arizona court ruled in 1995 that it is not protected by copyright and is, thus, in the public domain. There are so many wild ideas in the Urantia book that it's hard to know where to start. Quote, Lucifer, Satan, Melchizedek, Adam and Eve, and Jesus are all extraterrestrial beings who have visited Earth, unquote. Mo Siegel, who is still intimately involved with the Urantia Book and the Urantia Book Fellowship, tells us in the 20 most asked questions, unquote. In fact, Adam and Eve were brought to Earth to, quote, upstep the human race, unquote. More on that later. The first three parts of the Urantia Book describe a complicated universe with invisible seraphim and spirit and semi-spirit beings of all sorts. The last part tells the story of Jesus' entire life in detail, all 36 years. Though it has just a few thousand followers, the book has been translated into 20 languages, including Arabic, Chinese, Croatian, and Portuguese. There's even a famous operatic cycle based on it, as well as at least four fantasy novels. The Urantia Book itself does not represent a destructive cult, said Rick Ross, R-O-S-S, a cult expert who helped in Waco with the Branch Davidians. But some of its self-proclaimed prophets lead groups that can be seen as destructive cults, unquote. The book also purports that there have been many, many sons of God like Jesus on many different planets, because there are a billion worlds. When evolution is complete, each of these worlds will have 100,000 local universes with 10 million inhabited planets. Our Earth is called Urantia, and it's number 606 in a planetary group called Satania, S-A-T-A-N-I-A, the headquarters of which is called Jerusalem, J-E-R-U-S-E-M. When we die, we're reincarnated from planet to planet, then finally to paradise where the deity lives. There is a little piece of the deity in each of us called a thought adjuster. The fellowship will tell you that it's not a cult, but in the Urantia book, the revelator named the brilliant evening star of Nebadon, N-E-B-A-D-O-N, calls for Urantians to replace Christianity with a, quote, new cult, unquote, that will be the true religion, unquote, of the future. The Urantia book itself does not represent a destructive cult, but some of its self-proclaimed prophets lead groups that can be seen as destructive cults. That again, a quote from Rick Ross. So how did this insightful book come to be? Well, there are many origin stories, but everyone seems to agree that it's a direct voice, unquote, book, meaning that it wasn't written by a human. Instead, aliens communicated the text directly to a person, or in the words of the Urantia Book Fellowship, numerous supermortal personalities made contact through the thought adjuster, the indwelling spirit of God, of a particular human being on our world, unquote. According to William Sadler, the leader of the movement, a divine counselor, unquote, presented the ideas in a language called Uversa, U-V-E-R-S-A, which had to be translated into Salvington, S-A-L-V-I-N-G-T-O-N, and then into Satania, again, S-A-T-A-N-I-A, before it could be translated into English and communicated to a human being. The most accepted story found in How to Know What to Believe by Harold Sherman, quoted and summarized in Martin Gardner's Urantia, The Great Cult Mystery, is that around 1911, a man in Sadler's apartment building began having fits and spells at night. Eventually, he started speaking in other voices and revealed that he was a, quote, student visitor on an observation trip here from a far distant planet, unquote. William Sadler and his wife, Dr. Lena Sadler, had conversations with these voices for almost 10 years, while their adopted daughter, Christy, took notes. In the 1920s, a group of friends, eventually called the Forum, put together a list of 4,000 questions for these human beings, and lo and behold, a few weeks later, the sleeping man furiously wrote a manuscript that answered all of them. Along with later communications from the revelators, unquote, that manuscript became the Urantia book. These direct trance mediums were hugely popular in the second half of the 1800s, and apparently even the famed psychologist-philosopher William James was lured by one. In the 1990s, many followers of the Urantia book started to hear celestial voices of their own, though the Foundation hasn't acknowledged that any are legitimate, but instead has done quite a bit to discredit them. Psychoanalysis, hypnotism, intensive comparison all fail to show that the written or spoken messages of this individual have origin in his own mind, unquote. Sadler wrote in his 1929 book, The Mind at Mischief, Tricks and Deceptions of the Subconscious and How to Cope with Them. The original human transmitter's name is never revealed, but in Urantia, The Great Cult Mystery, from which much of the above is found, author Martin Gardner, who for many years wrote for Scientific American and other legitimate publications, makes the case that it was Sadler's brother-in-law, Wilfred Custer Kellogg. That's K-E-L-L-O-G-G. Sadler had been duped by other channelers in the past, most notably Ellen White, the founder of Seventh-day Adventism, but he believed that his brother-in-law was the real thing. I thought that was just the goofiest thing I'd ever heard, Mo Siegel wrote of the Urantia book in You've Got to Read This Book, 55 People Tell the Story of the Book That Changed Their Life. After I read it, I was not concerned about who had written it or how it had been written because it was so powerful, unquote. Siegel, who is now the current president of the Urantia Foundation and hosts a weekly study group at his house, discovered the Urantia book in 1969, the same year he started hiking up the Rockies for herbs. In fact, the text was a major reason he decided to found Celestial Seasonings. The ideas in the Urantia book were the inspiration for the uplifting quotes we print on the side of our tea boxes and our tea bags. After studying the teachings in the Urantia book, I knew that it would feel selfish and wasteful to simply focus on material success, he said. So as a young man, when I began thinking of what I could do to make a living, I immediately turned to the health food industry. The ideas in the Urantia book were the inspiration for the uplifting quotes we print on the side of our tea boxes and our tea bag tags. Mo and John used it as a guiding principle and continually quoted from the Urantia book. Carolyn McDougall, the company's fifth employee and the current founder and CEO of T-Cino, that's capital T-E-E-C-I-N-O, told Van Winkle's. At staff meetings, they would even use quotes to bolster their arguments. It was a guide for making sure of the moral values that underlay the company at the time, she added. In the 20 most asked questions about the Urantia book, Siegel is careful to say that all persons are equal in the sight of God, unquote, and that, quote, race should become irrelevant, unquote. But the text of the book itself is weighed down with some of the most racist ideas I've read in a long time. For example, starting around 500,000 years ago, six colored races appeared on Urantia, i.e. Earth: red, orange, yellow, green, blue, and indigo. Parenthetically, these correspond to more readily recognizable races, as we shall hear. Quote, the earlier races are somewhat superior to the latter. The red man stands far above the indigo or black race, says paper 51 of the Urantia book, and, quote, each succeeding evolutionary manifestation of a distinct group of mortals represents variation at the expense of original endowment, unquote. Furthermore, the yellow race usually enslaves the green, while the blue man, which corresponds to Caucasians, subdues the indigo or black race. The Urantia book was a guide for making sure of the moral values that underlay the company at that time, unquote. On every planet, throughout every universe, fair-skinned, blue-eyed aliens named Adam and Eve appear to, quote, upstep, i.e. genetically upgrade, the natives. When their progeny mate with the acceptable inhabitants of the planet, quote, the inferior stocks will be eliminated, and there will be one purified race, one language, and one religion, unquote, as Gardner explains it in Urantia, the Great Cult Mystery. But before that can happen, paper 51 of the Urantia book says, quote, the inferior and unfit are largely eliminated. It seems that you ought to be able to agree upon the biologic disfellowshipping of your more markedly unfit, defective, degenerate, and antisocial stocks. This process happens on every planet when Adam and Eve appear, but on Urantia, i.e. Earth, it didn't go according to plan. Adam and Eve messed up, so, quote, having failed to achieve race harmonization by the Adamic technique, quote, part two, the local universe section of the book tells us, quote, you must now work out your planetary problem of race improvement by other and largely human methods of adaptation and control. Again, this last couple of sentences, because this is key. But on Urantia, i.e. Earth, it didn't go according to plan, i.e. when the fair-skinned, blue-eyed Adam and Eve appeared. Adam and Eve messed up. So, quote, having failed to achieve race harmonization by the Adamic technique, part two, the local universe section of the book tells us, you must now work out your planetary problem of race improvement by other and largely human methods of adaptation and control, unquote. Biologic renovation of the racial stocks, the selective elimination of inferior human strains, paper 70 of the Urantia book says, will, quote, tend to eradicate many mortal inequalities, unquote. In fact, per the text, evil in the form of illness and disease exists because unfit, unquote, peoples like, quoting, Australian natives and the Bushmen and the pygmies of Africa, these miserable remnants of the non-social peoples of ancient times, unquote, have not yet been eliminated. Eugenics is the way to correct this error. Biologic renovation of the racial stocks, the selective elimination of inferior human strains, unquote, paper 70 of the Urantia book says, will, quote, tend to eradicate many mortal inequalities, unquote. Compare that to Hitler's words in Mein Kampf. Quote, the demand that defective people be prevented from propagating equally defective offspring represents the most human act of mankind, unquote. While Hitler didn't have anything to do with the writing of the Urantia book, William Sadler did. One of the most well-known psychiatrists of his era, Sadler got his start working for Dr. John H. Kellogg, again, K-E-L-L-O-G-G, at the famous Battle Creek Sanitarium, which treated celebrities like the Rockefellers, Montgomery Ward, and even Thomas Edison. Kellogg was a notorious eugenicist and founded the Race Betterment Foundation, whose goals were, quote, to call attention to the dangers which threaten the race, unquote. Influenced by Kellogg's ideas, Sadler published three eugenicist books, Longheads and Roundheads, or What's the Matter with Germany, published in 1918, Racial Decadence, An Examination of the Causes of Racial Degeneration in the United States, published in 1922, and The Truth About Heredity, published in 1927. The Urantia book echoes the ideas presented in these three books, and in some cases, it reproduces the text word for word. In Racial Decadence, Sadler expresses, among other notions, that the unfit, unquote, should be sterilized, that morality is heredity, unquote, and that, quote, some races are more moral than others, unquote. And in The Truth About Heredity, Sadler writes that marriage between races, quote, is to be deplored when one of the races would be inferior as compared with the other, which happens to be the biologic fact as concerns the white and Negro races in this country, unquote. His wife, Lena Sadler, who was John Kellogg's niece, had equally damning words. In the paper called Is the Abnormal to Become Normal, unquote, delivered to the Illinois Federation of Women's Clubs in 1932, and published in a collection called A Decade of Progress in Eugenics, Lena Sadler calls for a mandatory sterilization law and says that if we do not practice good eugenics, quote, ultimately, this monster will grow to such hideous proportions that it will strike us down, unquote. If we practice eugenics correctly, she continues, we'll eliminate, quote, at least 90% of crime, insanity, feeble-mindedness, moronism, and abnormal sexuality, not to mention many other forms of defectiveness and degeneracy. Thus, within a century, our asylums, prisons, and state hospitals would be largely emptied of their present victims of human woe and misery. Lena Sadler's speech was written nearly 100 years ago. Maybe things have changed for such modern-day followers of the Urantia book as Mo Siegel. Unfortunately, they have not. Illness and disease result from evil and cause suffering, Siegel writes in the 20 Most Asked Questions on the Urantia Book Fellowship website. Unfortunately, several factors hinder progress toward the development of a disease-free world. The laws of genetics are immutable and form the physical cornerstone of evolution. At the present time, mankind loses about as much progress as it makes by ignoring eugenics, unquote. Little information on the panel's current activities could be found, and repeated attempts to reach Mo Siegel and the Urantia Foundation were met with resounding silence. The fellowship is putting its money where its mouth is, too. In a 2010 email sent to, quote, readers with advanced information and forward-looking perspectives that are not suited for being posted on the website, unquote, a follower named Martin Greenhut, G-R-E-E-N-H-U-T, writes that the trustees have convened a panel on eugenics. He names all of the panel members, the most striking of whom is Kermit Anderson, who at the time was the genetic screening program director at Kaiser Permanente in California and the author of much genetics research. Little information on the panel's current activities could be found, and repeated attempts to reach both Mo Siegel and the Urantia Foundation were met with resounding silence. So where does this leave Celestial Seasonings? The company also declined to comment for this piece, which means we don't know if the Urantia book still guides their business decisions. Most likely not. Siegel retired in 2002, and John Hay, the other Urantia book believer and co-founder, left even earlier in 1985, pushed out by Siegel's desire to become a big company, quote, like Coca-Cola, unquote, Carolyn McDougall recalled. Hay went on to be the CEO of Rudy's Organic Bakery, White Dove Herbals, and more than a few technology companies. Siegel got his wish. Since 2000, the company has been part of Hain, H-A-I-N, Celestial Group, a massive multi-billion dollar corporation that also includes Arrowhead Mills, Maranatha, Spectrum Nationals, and Jason. Celestial pretty much invented an entire category that we now take for granted, natural health foods, and they do it well. How Good, HOW, GOLD, one word, which rates packaged food products, told me that Celestial's products receive a great rating, which means that in terms of social and environmental impact, according to How Good, they're 85% better than all of the food produced in the United States. Like any big company, though, over the years, they've faced a few class action lawsuits. The largest one is still ongoing. It accuses Celestial of falsely labeling products, including Sleepy Time Tea, as, quote, all natural, unquote, even though they allegedly contain pesticides. Propochlor, which is said to be in Sleepy Time Kids' Goodnight Grape Tea, is, quote, a bad actor chemical, meaning it is toxic, carcinogenic, or known reproductive or developmental toxicant, or a known reproductive or developmental toxicant, a carcinogen, and a development or reproductive toxin. Hain has countered that it had teas tested by the National Food Lab, but there's been some controversy about whether or not it is impartial, as the National Food Lab lists Celestial as one of its clients on its website, saying that, quote, somewhere along the line, we've had a hand in their success, unquote. That may be. And the same could be said for the Urantia book and its racist Celestial and not-so-celestial creators. Well, that again from the blog Van Winkle's, capital V-A-N, capital W-I-N-K-L-E, apostrophe S, by Megan or Megan Giller, M-E-G-A-N-G-I-L-L-E-R, from February 1st of this year being 2016.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
Again, the many important tributaries running from the Urantia story and the overlapping story of Celestial Seasonings, I think, are worth contemplating. Not only the, frankly, at least to me, unnerving similarity between the fair-skinned, blue-eyed Adam and Eve couple that are purported to begin mating or creating or what have you, generating the inhabitants of all of these different worlds, and the fair-skinned, blue-eyed, blonde-haired nine, who again are purported as being the progenitors of humankind and an awful lot of superhumankind in the nine, I think is worth contemplating. The pro-eugenics and, frankly, racist overtones in the Urantia book are really quite obvious and explicit, although when they're talking about, you know, the orange, blue, and green races, it tends to, I think, eclipse that to a certain extent. There is, again, a direct appeal in the Urantia book to eugenics and to the elimination of inferior, unquote, races. And sadly, Mo Siegel appears to have adopted much of that philosophy, as we read in that article. I would also note again the profound connections between people like William Sadler and many of the eugenics thinkers who had tremendous influence in this country and in Europe, the United Kingdom, as well as we have seen, including last week, in Germany as well. The Rockefellers, for example, who frequented the Battle Creek Sanitarium, run by Mr. Kellogg, were major advocates of eugenics, and indeed the epicenter of German and Third Reich eugenics was the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, their Institute for the Study of Racial Hygiene, and that was capitalized to a large extent by the Rockefeller Foundation. And For the Record 664, we took a look at the relationship between that institute and the SS experiments in the camps. Josef Mengele, the infamous angel of death of Auschwitz, would experiment on twins, and the experiments produced generated paperwork that was sent to the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute. And again, the Rockefeller Foundation capitalized the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute. One of the things that we have looked at in various programs, including For the Record M12, concerns the way in which the eugenics thinkers and much of their thought, although initially in the immediate aftermath of World War II. They were relegated to outlier status to an extent. Eventually, they were reincorporated into the mainstream intellectual tributaries of our culture. That is something to think about. I think as well, it is worth remembering that the so-called counterculture of the 1960s was itself a direct outgrowth of the intelligence communities, mind control programs, and drug experimentation programs that grew out of Operation Bluebird, Artichoke, and MKUltra. Those, in turn, were inextricably linked with many of the Third Reich scientists who were brought into this country under Project Paperclip. Indeed, I think that the New Age itself is something of a synthesis between the intelligence communities, mind control programs, and SS occultism. I also would note the focus on space aliens as being the generators of our civilization. One of the things I find really interesting about the so-called New Age is that one of the epicenters of the New Age, the importance of which could not be exaggerated, is the Institute for Noetic Sciences. We looked at that in, for the record, 874. One of the principal people involved with the Institute of Noetic Sciences was none other than Wernher von Braun, the notorious German rocket scientist who was brought over here along with many of his compatriots under Operation Paperclip. The sort of accepted narrative about Wernher von Braun was that he was an apolitical technocrat and was only interested in furthering science and the well-being of mankind. In fact, he had a very high rank in the SS, as we looked at in, for the record, 874. And in fact, Wernher von Braun was deeply involved with war crimes and the selection of slave laborers to work on the V2 projects. And those slave laborers were worked to death under the most brutal conditions. And if they objected or rebelled, they were executed in, again, a very brutal fashion. And I think that the programming we have done in the past, talking about UFOs and the overwhelming probability that they are A, very real, B, do not come from outer space or space aliens, and C, are in all likelihood directly evolved from Third Reich technological developments that were achieved during the latter part of the war, seeking to gain an aeronautical edge as Allied air forces came to dominate the skies over Germany. That also plays into, I think, the examination, the critical examination of the Urantia book and also the Nine. I think as our world becomes increasingly imperiled, and I can foresee a time when, say, global warming and climate change and new diseases, whether deliberately generated using genetic engineering or simply as a result of mishaps in which GMO crops or medicines or what have you go awry and horrible new diseases are coursing through mankind, and the environment is ravaged and the economy has collapsed, whether because of a deliberately engineered financial crisis or simply because people like Donald Trump are placed in charge of things and then will most assuredly will not know how to solve the crises that they have helped to create. I can very easily envision a time when an increasingly uneducated and therefore intellectually and spiritually susceptible humankind could be dominated by, quote, alien beings, unquote, coming down in, quote, UFOs, unquote. In fact, I don't think these alien beings would come from outer space. I think they would be human beings or perhaps holograms or perhaps even genetically modified beings coming down in, quote, spacecraft, unquote, such as, quote, flying saucers, unquote, that in fact would be of altogether terrestrial origins. It is a matter of public record, and we examined this in a Food for Thought post, that in fact the CIA had been engaged in the use of disc-shaped experimental aircraft for really some time ago. The point being that disc-shaped aircraft, quote, flying saucers, unquote, are not necessarily of extraterrestrial origin. And again, I think the dangers of waiting for our brothers from space to take charge of our world and implement new spiritual disciplines and a new government could not be exaggerated. Thinking about a time when, due to climate change, our environment was utterly devastated, when due to the spread of diseases, human beings were devastated, perhaps due to the meltdown of a nuclear power plant or two, or even a small nuclear war, the human race would be devastated. And perhaps throwing into that an economic collapse as well. I can see a time when uneducated and very desperate people could be brought to their knees, and they would be saying to themselves, my God, this is horrible. What can we do? Who will save us? Who are going to be our redeemers in this most terrible of times? And then someone will say, look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's space aliens from Uranus. And we will be told that, yes, our brothers or perhaps sisters from space have come to help us. The Adam and Eve of the Urantia book, or the nine, or what have you, the blonde-haired, fair-skinned, blue-eyed, quote, aliens, unquote, will condescend to return to Earth and step down from their flying saucers and educate our poor beings about just how we are going to improve ourselves and eliminate an awful lot of people who are deemed to be expendable in one way or another. And again, bearing in mind the extent to which the so-called counterculture of the 1960s was a direct outgrowth of experimentation by CIA and other elements, I suspect the whole bloody counterculture itself was deliberately launched in order to waylay much of humanity and the baby boomers in particular. I don't think we can be too careful about what looms on the horizon. And I think the Urantia book and the lessons to be gleaned here are very, very important indeed. I also wonder about the companies that have grown out of Celestial Seasonings. Are they perhaps some of these multi-billion-dollar corporations? Are they linked with the Borman Network? Was the Borman Network perhaps involved with some of the genesis of these companies? Again, I don't have an answer to that. But certainly we find very recognizable eugenics and exterminationist philosophies in the Urantia book, and we find those same outlooks in the intellectual publications and generation of people like William Sadler and others who are connected to the genesis of the Urantia book. So be careful. This concludes For the Record program number 909. A different kind of tea party, eugenics, fascism, and the New Age. This is being recorded on May 19th of the year 2016. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.